Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Justin. How are you this evening?
A little tired, but I'm great. Just been a long week for us. You just released your Framed podcast, and I finally got around to listening to it. I'm a bad friend. I should have listened to it on day one, but I did it today, and I loved it.
Thanks. No, I appreciate anybody that listens whenever, so it doesn't have to be day one. I've heard from some other podcasters who are listening to it now. So thank you to everyone for the support. And for those of you who saw Framed in the feed and thought, oh, that's just an ad. Well, it was an ad, but it was for another podcast that I'm working on with some other people.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
If you're like me and refuse to let go of your skinny jeans, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. Looking for a fun and relaxing way to unwind? Download Two Dots, the free puzzle game with over 5,000 unique levels. Connect dots to solve colorful puzzles and collect rewards. With different gameplay modes like scavenger hunt and arcade, there's always a new adventure. Don't want a game alone? Connect and engage with the larger Two Dots community to match up your skills. If you're looking for the perfect game to help you relax but also keep you engaged, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS.
What are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about Nathan Carman. He is a suspect in two deaths.
So we have one death of his grandfather, who was murdered, and then the death of his mother, which is either a terrible boating accident or premeditated murder.
We're going to pick up in 2016. Nathan was 22 years old. Nathan has been living in an RV in his mother's driveway, and that's because he was ready to get out. He and his mother had been at odds a lot. He'd already run away once, and they had to go looking for him. And so that was sort of a compromise. He was only speaking to his mother via notes. So he would write down what he wanted her to know and hand it over to her. This is obviously a relationship that has hit kind of a wall or something. I mean, when you can't speak to one another, that's pretty bad. But Nathan has an idea, or at least we believe it was Nathan, to take his mom out on a fishing trip because that's something they enjoy doing together. Even when they were at odds, they would sometimes find a way to go fishing, to go out on a boat.
He has Asperger's, so he's already somewhat socially awkward, especially in time of conflict. I think the writing notes thing sort of falls within that realm. He's trying. I mean, they're communicating, so not too far outside of his norm, I would say.
He had bought a boat about a year before, and it was the chicken pox.
I don't know why somebody would name their boat that. I mean, should I buy a boat and call it like polio, smallpox, something? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't figure it out. But it's a 31-foot downeaster is what it's known as. He is planning to take his mom out on this fishing trip, but they're going to go out a ways.
It's called deep sea fishing. That's where tuna are at. It's not anywhere close to the shoreline, unlike where they normally fish, which is a small island that's off the coast. They're heading out several miles.
Now, some had said that Nathan wasn't an experienced boater, so this was a bad idea. He wouldn't hear of it. You know, he wanted to go out with his mother, and that's what he was going to do.
They normally go to Block Island when they fish, but they go way past that on this trip. They leave in the middle of the night to make it out to their destination, and it takes them all night to get there. That's how far out it takes them. Now, their boat, I think it does about 20-something knots per hour, so 20 miles per hour, and it takes them all the way until daytime to get there. And they set up, and they start fishing. Everything's going good so far. But according to Nathan, he hears the engine making a weird noise. Its tone, its hum is changed. And he pops open the cover, and he looks in, and he sees that there's water in the engine compartment. And he sees that the belts are turning and just flipping water up out of the compartment. So he shuts the engine off, closes the compartment, and he's going to start troubleshooting to see where the water is coming in and if there's something he needs to do to unflood the engine, whether it be a bailing bucket or some sort of pump to get the water out of there. He tells his mom to pull in the fishing reels at the back of the boat while he goes to the front of the boat to get supplies.
Nathan had come prepared. He had a specialized raft that would inflate as soon as it hit the water. It was loaded with some supplies. And he also had an emergency beacon that would send a signal directly to the Coast Guard.
According to Nathan, by the time he gets to the front of the boat and starts getting these supplies and the raft, the boat's already underwater. By the time he turns around, he's a foot deep in water. The deck has disappeared. And so is his mother, and he can't see the back of the boat. This life raft is, I guess, designed to deploy automatically. Some people call it a ditch bag, but this was a little bit nicer. It was like a four-man life raft. It's square with a kind of a pyramid top with a light on it. Nathan says that because he didn't realize they were sinking and they were in such dire straits that he didn't activate the distress beacon on the boat. And all he had time to do was to deploy this raft and get inside. Once he was inside the raft, he looked for his mom. He had a whistle. He was blowing into that and calling out for his mother. But the boat goes down and his mother is nowhere to be found. Just needs to survive on this raft now. It sounds like a terrible incident of as soon as you know there's a problem, it's already too late.
Well, and that can happen with fires too, where you think you have more time than you actually do. But we only know what happened because Nathan was rescued 7 days later.
Yeah. A trolley called the Orient Lucky is coming along and they see his raft and they're able to throw him a rope and pull him in. The Coast Guard is trying to assess what happened. Nathan will talk about the issues on the boat and then ask, I lost my mother. Have you found her yet? Now, some people will say that was the last thing he asked was about his mom, not the first thing. And regardless of whether this guy has autism or not, I didn't really find that much issue in the order of which he said things. But what is apparent is his deadpan, complete lack of empathy or any sort of panic in his voice. It's just very monotoned. It's like, well, here's what happened. The boat sank and I lost my mom. Have you found her yet? No emotion, which is very much in line with somebody with his disorder. Now, when Nathan's found 7 days later, he's in pretty good shape. Not starving. He's not too dehydrated. He's not beat up. A lot of Coast Guard people or boaters think, how could he have had 7 days worth of water and food to last? Plus, there were storms. He's not beat up. He doesn't have any broken bones. So suspicions are on the rise.
Yeah, his physical condition does not seem to fit the environment that he was in and for the length of time that he was in that environment. And this is not a person who had any experience with this either. That was his first time. The Coast Guard had been looking for them since the day after they had left. They were reported missing that Sunday, September 18th. And it was on the 24th of September, 2016, that the Coast Guard had stopped looking for them. Part of that is there's a window of survivability at play here. And they just thought, no, if they're out there on their own, this is not good. They had searched in areas where they thought they could have gone to.
They searched around Block Island, and then they expanded the search to like 62,000 square miles, encompassing the coasts of like Rhode Island and New York and New Jersey.
And so, as we said, on the 25th is when Nathan was found.
Now, they're trying to investigate what happened. I mean, anytime there's any sort of boating accident or any type of accident, they're going to ask questions. And I'm sure initially they don't like Nathan's answers or his tone, which probably puts a little bit more focus on him.
Nathan said that the boat went down in Block Canyon. And a research scientist who is familiar with the continental shelf, who works for the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, he said, if the chicken pox went down where Nathan said it did, then given where, you know, how the currents flow, then his life raft should have drifted in the opposite direction. So he, at least from his point of view, thinks that there's a problem with Nathan's story, which is interesting. We've heard this kind of stuff before in cases where people try to analyze what the currents are like and the winds and, you know, which way would something go. And I mean, it's not like he's steering that. life raft. And some people doubted that his mother would have even wanted to go on a trip like that, out that far in an area where, you know, there really isn't any help.
They were doing tuna fishing, which most professional industry fishermen say that requires a 4-man team and a larger boat with this and that. So it's just implausible for the two of them to go do this. I guess I would say maybe they didn't realize what they were biting off. You know, they were just going to do it. I wouldn't know that tuna fishing would require all that. If somebody said, let's go tuna fishing, I'd be like, let's go. I wouldn't think, oh, well, we need a 4-man team. I would just say, let's go. Let's try this. I wouldn't think about it.
It took me a number of years before I realized just how big tuna were.
Oh, yeah. The size of you.
When you realize how big they are, now you know why you need a team. You can't just have a guy and his mom go. It's not going to work. But then again, you know, some people just set out to do something and they don't listen to naysayers.
Hey, we started this podcast and I'm sure somebody would have said, well, you need all this equipment and blah, blah, blah. But we just did it. And, you know, we got better at it through time. The other issue they have is it only takes a second to turn on the emergency transmitter. So he didn't do that because the boat sank so fast. People think, well, that would have been an easy thing to do and you would have been rescued literally the same day.
I actually can understand why he didn't do it, because sometimes in the heat of the moment, you forget to do something important like that.
And especially him, who can get easily overwhelmed if things are not going according to plan.
Now, some people have questioned why he would ask his mother to reel in the tuna lines if, you know, if the boat was going to sink anyway. Well, that is a big question.
I don't think that much about it because I think, well, these are really expensive fishing poles. He doesn't think the boat's sinking immediately. He just knows that they're taking on water. So if he thinks they have half an hour, an hour, they can pack up and deal with the situation. When it comes to his survivability in the raft, it said that he did have enough supplies to last 7 to 8 days, especially water. So I'm sure it's not comfortable to survive on a raft for 7 days, but it's not impossible either. And a raft is, to me, a big bouncy castle, so I'm not sure how tore up he's going to get in a storm and break any bones if he's just lying there holding on for dear life. I don't get the argument that he should have been in way worse shape. I think he was sunburned and dehydrated, and that's what I would expect with somebody being out there for 7 days with supplies that he did have.
Well, some people say he wasn't dehydrated and that he looked no worse for the wear.
So possibly we don't know the true timeline of when this boat was sunk or had sunk, depending on if it was intentionally done or not. And it's possible that he had spent much less time on this raft.
They didn't find any evidence of this boat, did they, Justin?
No. I mean, if they were where they said they were, it's like 1,000 feet down, hundreds of feet below the surface of the ocean. So I don't expect the local law enforcement to have enough of a budget to go deep sea diving to check this wreckage out, which I think would answer a lot of questions. But without it, we're left with only Nathan's word.
And that's all the authorities had to go with, because when they got this investigation underway, they had cooperation from a lot of law enforcement, from Nathan's relatives, but Nathan himself didn't really want to talk about this. And they even asked him to take a polygraph, and he said no to that.
He doesn't really want to talk about it because he is aware how he comes off to others. He is self-aware of how he doesn't pick up on social cues. He doesn't show emotion. He doesn't make eye contact. He has social anxiety. He has poor social skills. He's hypersensitive to light, to sounds, to textures. He knows that all these tics will make him look for the worse.
September 28th, 2016, there's a search warrant issued and Nathan Carman's home will be investigated.
So his home in Vermont is not raided, but searched by police, and they take his computer. They're looking for evidence to show any sort of plan here, activity that would show that he meant to kill his mom or meant to sink the boat. Any evidence that leads him to this was intended.
But they kind of hit a roadblock with this, don't they?
Turns out that he threw his hard drive away from one of his computers. Yeah, sort of weird. Why would you do that? And he threw away his GPS unit, which I think would have had going out on a limb, but I think that might have been important because you could have tracked his movements and where the boat's location was, therefore vetting his story.
So if Nathan was telling the truth when he gave the information he did early on, then I think he's erasing any goodwill that he had had up to that point.
Yeah. And hey, I have an old laptop that only recognizes the hard drive half the time, and I have to hit the caps lock key every time I get into Windows. What if something happened, something terrible happened, and then I bought a new laptop right now? It would look bad. Like, well, why do you have a new laptop? Why did you get rid of your old one right at this point? Why did you buy a new one? But that's a little different than throwing away just the hard drive and just a GPS unit. I think it looks really bad on his part. But he claims, I'm working with law enforcement. I'm cooperating with the investigators. And if they wanted the GPS unit, they should have asked for it. I would have handed it over.
So he looks very suspicious, and the authorities are definitely looking into Nathan Carman.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
It's about 6 weeks after his rescue that a memorial service is held for Linda, his mother, at a church in Hartford. And Nathan said that he had invited the whole family. And I don't know. It seemed like he had some family there. But Linda's sisters were not there.
Nope. they cut off all communication with Nathan because they think he did this on purpose. And, have we mentioned that there was a $7 million, almost $8 million estate inheritance that he's going to get?
Well, keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Nathan was doing something to his boat prior to leaving.
This is a big, big point of contention and probably the reason why the boat actually sank, because Nathan tells us what he did. Before he bought the boat, the previous owner had done like $60,000 worth of upgrades and whatnot to the boat. I spoke with Tyler from Minds of Madness about trim tabs, and he kind of gave me the rundown on what they do, which are hydraulic flaps that allow you to stabilize the boat. A lot of the times the bow will come up really high, and there's this thing called plowing where you're just kind of plowing through the water and you're not getting a level plane, which is more than likely the most efficient way to drive the boat. So these trim tabs help you stabilize the boat. They're kind of like stabilizers in a car. If you take a turn too quick, it sort of adjusts. And these trim tabs are absolutely necessary, or they absolutely help when you're out on the ocean with large choppy waves and whatnot. But the drawback is they create more drag. And if they're not working properly, i.e. the hydraulics aren't working, so they're too high or too low, well, they can cause problems too. He removes these trim tabs.
It leaves four holes in this boat at the transom's waterline. So that sounds bad. It sounds like, look, he seals them up with some kind of putty, but what are the odds that that will work?
Well, it's not something I would attempt myself. I would hire somebody to do this. I don't work on my own car. I could probably change my own oil and change a tire, no problem. I've looked into changing my own brakes, but I just don't really want to do that. I'd rather have a professional change my brakes. So when I hit the brakes, I know I'm going to stop. And I would prefer a professional remove trim tabs so my boat doesn't sink when I put it back in the water. Also, he takes these things off and they go on this fishing trip. Some articles say 6 hours later. It's like the same day. So he hasn't even really tested to see if they're watertight. He could have been taken on water as soon as he put it back. He also replaces a pump. It's said that he removed one bulkhead in the hull of the boat, which if you're taking on water, those bulkheads will slow the amount of water you take on. But if it's missing a bulkhead and you have four holes that are the size of silver dollars, well, you can see how this gets really bad really quick.
When they look over all this information, they put all this together, it's looking bad. It looks like he weakened the boat and then took it out somewhere. Well, it was a bigger risk to go where he went with this boat,
which was pretty much untested. It's like changing your own tire, not knowing what you're doing, and then going on a road trip the next day. You might want to drive around the block a few times before you take that road trip.
The guy who had worked on the boat before Nathan bought it said that the holes that these trim tabs went into were about a half inch in diameter. And then you have a witness, another boater, who said that he saw Nathan Carman bending over the transom using a power drill, drilling into these holes, which would have widened them.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. A drill is just not something you probably want to use as a tool when you're working on a boat's hull, especially around the waterline.
Things get worse for Nathan. In July of 2017, the investigation, while they have some suspicious evidence, I guess the authorities don't think they have enough to actually charge Nathan. Time has gone by. Linda's sisters, who, Justin has said, were blaming Nathan for what happened to their sister, they filed a Slayer action against Nathan in civil court. As we know, civil court is not like a regular court case. The burden of proof is much lower, and it's easier to get the result you want there. Yes. And these have been used many, many times to great success for people.
So essentially, they're trying to put the inheritance on hold so they can divvy it out to other family members, other next of kin. It has nothing to do with the band.
Here's a little twist. They want to stop him from getting any kind of inheritance from his grandfather. The Slayer action, which is trying to hold him accountable because he did something criminal, they're saying that he killed their father, his grandfather.
His grandfather was found lying in his bed with his head blown off with a .308 rifle.
This is quite an accusation. And just to give everyone an idea, Nathan Carman's favorite human being in the world, according to virtually anybody you asked, was his grandfather, John Chocolis. John Chocolis, he made his wealth off of assisted living homes, convalescent homes, and this all began in the 60s. But he built up quite a fortune, hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, he loved family. You know, his quote was, "Without family, you've got nothing." But he was kind of a tough guy, and he didn't want to just hand people money. And he has quite a history of doling out a bit of money or teasing some of his relatives with money to get them to do things. You know, at one point, he asked his daughter Linda and her husband to move out by where he was. And he said, "I'll give you this money and I'll get you work and this and that." And then they moved. Well, he took care of the home part of it, but not the money part. Yet he was very, very good to his grandchildren. He loved Nathan. And he even set up a trust fund kind of account for him. But his daughter Linda drained it. And so then he had to set up another one, and he put $400,000 in it. And then he put one of his other daughters in charge of that money so that Nathan could get access, but his mother couldn't drain it. And he also bought Nathan a horse.
Nathan wasn't really into horses, but he was having a hard time developing relationships. He had to take care of this horse, and it gave him the ability to form connections. Even if it's with an animal, it helped him. It was very therapeutic.
Anyway, what you need to know, though, is that Nathan and his grandfather got along pretty well. Like anyone, they probably had some issues here or there, but within this family, it was a very good relationship. Nathan and his mother, they had kind of a rocky relationship. His mother had a rocky relationship with her grandfather or with her father. And then they even had many incidents where there were accusations of he shoved me, she hit me. This went on year after year. And family would say, "Oh yeah," every holiday they would have some kind of big blow up, and then it would kind of cool off. One thing that is strange is, and well, maybe it's not strange, but Linda was heard to say, "He owes me money and I want my cut of it." Something to that effect. In other words, if he died, you know, there would be inheritance handed out to his children. And it was pretty substantial. Tens of millions of dollars.
So at the time of his murder, Linda was questioned and given a polygraph test, which she passed. So according to the articles and law enforcement, they cleared her. Meanwhile, you have Nathan, who refuses a polygraph, runs away after his grandfather's murder, and happens to own a rifle that he'd recently purchased not too long before the murder. It happens to be a .308 caliber, happens to be the same caliber of rifle that was used to murder his grandfather. It was a Sig Sauer Patrol 716 rifle.
Now, Nathan can't produce any kind of receipt. He can't show when he purchased the rifle. He acknowledges that he bought it. The rifle cost about $3,000. So for a lot of people, they're thinking, that's a costly weapon.
Yeah, I don't own, I think if you took all my weapons, they wouldn't equal $3,000. Yeah.
And Nathan said, I don't know where it is. I must have lost it.
I'm thinking about Michael Peterson. Did he kill his wife on the stairwell? What happened? And then you hear about the previous woman that dies on the stairwell. And you're like, he looks pretty guilty. And here I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, okay, your grandfather died. He was shot with a rifle that you happen to own, a very similar rifle, and you don't know where that weapon is now. It just, you're connecting the dots. I mean, I don't care if he comes off weird, deadpan or anything. When you connect the dots, he looks suspicious as hell.
Yeah, he owned a couple of other rifles, but they weren't the right caliber. And Nathan is someone who is a professed lover of firearms. And he's purchased a bunch of them. But apparently this was the only .308 he ever bought, and it's gone. You can see where the authorities are kind of at a dead end with that, because they can't locate it.
They can't locate his hard drive. They can't find his GPS unit to track his movements. Wow. Looks like he's covering up a lot.
Here are some details on John Chocolis's death. One of his daughters had stopped at his home to check on her dad, and she found him at 8:30 a.m. on a Friday. This was December 20th, 2013. So this is close to 3 years before his mother, Nathan's mother, disappeared. John's daughter said she found him in his bed and he had been shot 3 times in the head and back. They couldn't find any signs that the house was broken into. Nothing was stolen. And every bullet casing was taken by whoever shot him before they left. At the time, John Chocolis was 87 years old and was considered to be in pretty good health. Really, the only bad thing that had been going on for him was his wife had passed away not too long before this.
So on September 27th, 2016, Nathan submitted a claim for his lost boat to the National Liability and Fire Insurance Company. All the modifications to the boat, quote-unquote repairs,
they look like downgrades.
Yeah. And they responded with, Carmen is not entitled to coverage because the loss of the boat was caused intentionally by or with the knowledge of Carmen. Carmen knew his boat was unseaworthy when it departed Ram Point Marina. The boat's unseaworthy condition proximately caused its sinking. Carmen's loss was not fortuitous, because he had previously removed a structural bulkhead from the boat, because he had previously determined the boat's stuffing box wasn't sealed to the hull properly, because he never determined the boat's bilge pump functioned correctly, and because several hours before departing the marina, he removed the boat's trim tabs and therefore opened 4 half-dollar size holes in the hull near the waterline. It did not fill them in a satisfactory fashion. Saying he sabotaged the boat.
Yeah, and that sounds like the decision an insurance company would make.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
When he's questioned about the repairs done to the boat, of course, Nathan says, nothing I did to that boat made it unseaworthy. Those repairs are not the reason why the boat sank. Yet, those repairs are most likely why it sank, and law enforcement and insurance companies agree. So he's seems to be in denial of his own actions there.
Because they never located the boat, because it's so far down, if you even believe that's where it sank at Block Canyon, he could have had anything on that boat to assist its sinking. We just don't know. We don't have the evidence.
Or murder weapon, too. That's the other theory, is he could have offed his mom and then scuttled the boat with her body on it as a disposal.
And he could have scuttled the boat at a later point, too. When the Coast Guard was looking for him, they say that area where he was eventually found, that they had been throughout that area searching. So they're really surprised they never saw him. When you look at this, you say he had kind of a rocky relationship with his mother. Things had gotten kind of bad there just before they went on the fishing trip. But you contrast that with the death of his grandfather, who he adored. It's very confusing. So while you can add up all of the evidence and say, wow, Nathan looks like the best suspect, it doesn't seem to make sense. Normally, you get rid of people you don't like. It seemed like he loved his grandfather, and his grandfather loved him.
Meanwhile, his mom doesn't get along with the grandfather or with her father. Could it be possible that she used the rifle and then got rid of it? She had more motive. She was going to get the inheritance. You have different ideas there.
One other thing that we need to really clarify here, in case some of you missed it or we weren't clear enough. As you know, Nathan Carman was the last person to be with his mother when she disappeared. The last person seen with John Chocolis was Nathan Carman. They had dinner at his grandfather's home on December 20th, 2013.
And then after his death, he sort of fled for a while.
His mother, Linda, John's daughter, was saying that she and Nathan were supposed to drive to Rhode Island to go fishing, and they were supposed to meet up at about 3 a.m. 3 a.m., and he wasn't there. Now, keep in mind, this is the exact time that the authorities would be asking, where were you at this time? Can you account for your whereabouts? Well, Nathan Carman could not, but she waited and waited, and then she goes home. But then at 4 in the morning, Nathan calls her and says, hey, I'm in Glastonbury and I'm ready to go. So what happened?
Well, I'm sure he was just stuck in traffic.
This was a common thing for them to meet up early in the morning like this. So it just doesn't make sense that on the very night slash morning that his grandfather is shot to death, Nathan cannot say where he was. When we gave you the original story about Linda Carman going missing, and then, you know, the police end up going over to John Chocolis's house and they're looking over everything, Linda and her son are out fishing. Now, he was arrested. They questioned him.
He was the prime suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. He was the last one seen with his grandfather. And so he was definitely the person they were zeroing in on. But again, his family came forward. His mother and her sisters all took polygraph tests. Nathan didn't want to do that.
But again, we have a situation where law enforcement doesn't have enough evidence to charge anybody, I guess. Whereas I'm thinking, I think we've seen other people get dragged in and charged with less than what I feel is at least enough probable cause and circumstantial evidence to at least get this an indictment.
Because he has autism spectrum disorder, Justin and I, we do our best to research this stuff. Everything we can find says that typically, you know, someone like him wouldn't be expected to be able to plan things like this.
They have a regiment that they follow every morning. It's just a little bit harder for them to plan anything that's outside of the ordinary.
But investigators, when they were investigating his grandfather's murder, find some really odd things in Nathan's apartment at the time, which were handwritten notes that detailed self-propelled improvised explosive devices and sniper rifles on an aerial video stabilizing platform.
They also find that he was at a political rally. Somebody had reported him for his suspicious behavior, and he was removed.
At the center of this case could be a lot of money. The other part could be someone becoming less stable. And the evidence for that is from witnesses. His mother's boyfriend made a point to say that he warned Linda that he's probably going to cut your throat in your sleep at some point during the night. Just different people talking about this kind of stuff. And then you have the evidence that was found where he had improvised explosive devices. He also had lost his horse at some point. His horse had died of colic. He loved that horse, and that prompted him to run away. And he was gone for, what, 4 days? Mm-hmm. And they found him. He had pictures of himself with his horse, and he also had a baggie that had some of his horse's mane in it. So obviously, it was devastating to him. This happened, I think, about a couple of years before his grandfather was murdered. There are some different theories here. Some people suspect that because it was his mother who was constantly railing against her father, John Chocolis, that maybe she's the one that pulled the trigger and killed her dad with her son's firearm and then disposed of it. And because he's doing the best he can to explain, at least from his point of view, what he has to say, which is, I don't know anything.
Yeah. And his tone is poor, to say the least. And he's giving relevant information that he thinks they need, but not giving much more than that. So we can go with his mom killed her dad, and then he has a terrible boating accident where his mom dies. This is either the most unlucky guy ever, or maybe there's something more to it.
It's possible that she faked her death, but I don't really buy this because Nathan was found out on the water in his raft, and he says that he lost track of her. I mean, where would she have gone? It wasn't like she was in a place where she could just get away.
I mean, they would have to have taken two boats out, scuttled one. He gets on a raft, and she takes off in another boat, but we don't have any evidence of this. That's the only way I see this happening. Or maybe she never was on the boat in the first place. Who knows?
There's also a theory that says that Linda killed her dad and also planned on getting rid of Nathan with the sinking of the chicken pox.
I don't really like that one because I would just assume Nathan would be like, yeah, she tried to kill me and bad things happened and the boat sank. Because he's in the clear, he doesn't really need to lie.
Well, but he wouldn't have to lie because this theory would say that she got caught up in the lines that she was bringing up. And so she went down with the boat, but she had planned to have him go down with the boat. Hmm. It's not a provable theory at all. It's all speculation, but it's great speculation, I guess.
I don't like it because I feel he is the reason that boat sank. Whether it be intentional or unintentional, he's the one that removed these trim tabs. He's the one that did work on the boat, which at least law enforcement and the insurance companies say, yeah, that would make the boat sink if you did that and you didn't patch the holes correctly. This is your fault. Regardless of whether he intended to kill his mom or not, I feel he is responsible for the death of his mother because of this boat's condition.
Now, there's one other theory with the Nathan Carman case. And I say theory because I was talking to a guy I know. I told him all about this Nathan Carman case from the beginning as best as I could from memory. And when I got done talking to him, he said, What if Nathan's mother took his gun, his rifle, killed her dad, and then Nathan decided to take care of her?
Because that he was really close with his grandfather, so he's mad about this.
Yeah, and so he took care of it. And that would explain why he didn't want to talk about the rifle with anyone. He just said it was missing. He didn't know where it was because he took care of it. It's a secret. His grandfather was killed, and then he took out the killer. So that's another theory. I think it's very interesting. What makes this case unique to me is the fact that in all the research we've done, people with Asperger's or autism spectrum disorder, they're not capable of planning something like this. Like this, I mean, killing their grandfather and then killing their mother, getting rid of evidence, making it where these cases are very difficult to investigate. So you take that, and then with it, you take in all the evidence of Nathan weakening the boat, of Nathan buying a firearm and then somehow losing it. I mean, the list goes on and on. Let's go down these lists. I mean, he got rid of his hard drive, threw it away. He got rid of the GPS, tossed it somewhere, took out the trim tabs, patched it probably very poorly with putty after widening the holes, and removed a bulkhead. So what are we left with? I just like to say that we can study autism spectrum disorder. We can say what we expect to see from someone who has this. But I don't think it's fair to take all the evidence out and say, it doesn't work with what we expect from him. No, I think we have to look at all the evidence and say, this is pretty overwhelming. I mean, why would he do all these things?
I can accept that he totally flubbed a repair on the boat or a modification on the boat, which led to it sinking. In all of this case, the sticking point for me is, oh, I saw the boat was taking on water. I walked to the front of the boat and it was already sinking. And I lost my mom, like, in mere moments. For a boat to sink that fast, I mean, I'm sorry, but four silver dollar holes, that's not going to sink a boat in a minute or less. It's just not going to happen. I have a problem with what he says.
Let's just say it could happen. Then you have to get over the hurdles of the hard drive and the GPS being tossed away. Those were specific items that he got rid of that he can't account for why. It's very suspicious. So at every turn, Nathan is doing something that is very, very suspicious. So I think after a while, once you've been hit in the head enough times, you have to tell yourself, wow, this guy looks pretty guilty.
I think we'd be discriminating if we said that he wasn't capable of some of these things.
I think that's very fair. I mean, he may not like it, but, you know, that sounds fair to me.
Here's one more piece that I found interesting. The sisters are suing him in court. He is representing himself, but he keeps getting continuances and fighting it legally. His initial motion was, hey, I fired my lawyers because they weren't doing what I wanted them to. But then he's telling the judge, well, you can't make a decision yet because I have to sell my house so I can hire new lawyers, but I'm representing myself. It sounds intentional, like he's playing games. And I'm thinking, this guy's high functioning enough that he's actually doing a good job representing himself and playing the court systems and delaying this civil suit against him. If he's competent enough to do that, then planning things doesn't seem that far-fetched to me. My problem is, I think if we had the boat at the bottom of the ocean, if they were able to recover this thing, look at it, look at the evidence, possibly find, I don't know, somebody's body on that boat, we would have the answers. But like a lot of cases, this is purely circumstantial and somewhat loose circumstantial evidence. And I don't blame the prosecutors and law enforcement for not going after him because it's kind of weak. It's a weak case. I think they could get a conviction though, because I've seen them get convictions on far less, but
there are different ways to look at this. How many times have we said We feel like the authorities should have been more careful, right?
Yeah.
And then in a case like this where you feel like you know the answer, but you know, you'd like to have a body, you'd like to have that weapon. Sometimes you just don't get the evidence you need to feel confident taking it to court. But again, he's in civil court, and I think that's where he may lose his battle. But what's to come of this? I mean, where will this go? I do like the fact that you said, let's not sell this guy short. I mean, he could very well be much better at planning than people want to give him credit for. He's done some surprising things. And so with all of the stuff that he's done and with the way he's fighting this civil court case, he may lose, but I mean, what are the chances he'll ever end up in prison?
I don't think he's going to end up in prison at all. I don't think the criminal system will go after him. I could be wrong. I might be eating my words in a year or two, but I think the insurance policy denial and all of his actions are going to be what his downfall is, at least in the civil suit, in this inheritance. I think he's going to lose because I think it's been proven that he is responsible for his mother's death. Just they can't prove intent.
Well, it's said that Nathan was considered to be pretty intelligent, and I would say, based on what we've researched here, he does seem very intelligent, because he may have gotten away with two murders.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Third Love. Third Love knows there's a perfect fitting bra for everyone. Right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/GenY, find your perfect fitting bra, and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/GENWHY. Get 15% off today.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.